Safety, dependability, and power. Chevy Silverado isn't happy unless the work is hard and the day is long. No wonder Silverado is America's number one best-selling retail pickup truck. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and put a Silverado in your toolbox.
Dream on, little girl. Dream on, little girl.
At a royal palace dance, I waltzed all night with the prince of Timbuktu. He praised my beauty to the skies, and when I looked into his eyes, I realized the prince looked just like you. I dreamed that I was Queen of Spain, sailing on the bounding main, when a lofty pirate ship hove into view. A handsome buccaneer so bold and captured me and all my gold. I let him hold me 'cause he looked like you. I dreamed I was Princess of Bombay, inspecting my army one Monday. 1,000 men came marching by, each looked like you, each winked his eye. Gee, I wish I could have slept till Sunday. I dreamed that at my coronation, I shocked every foreign nation, giving up my throne to marry you. 'Cause I'd be queen of all the world the day you say that I'm your girl.
Yes, it's as bad as I remember it, but it was a dream song. I Dreamed. That's Betty Johnson, 1956 on Bally. Got to number 9 on the pop charts. Fortunately, didn't chart R&B. She was a regular on Bob McNeil's Breakfast Club. She also was pretty much a regular on Jack Parr's Tonight Show. And at the time, she was married to conductor Charles Randolph Green. So Betty Johnson was a big deal back then. And I Dreamed was one of her big hits. And we will be talking about dreaming with Kelly Sullivan Walden, dream expert, as soon as she makes it home. I hope she doesn't live in Los Angeles. That could take hours. Yeah, I grew up in Los Angeles, and we had, you know, erratic traffic at any time. You know, it was a thing where, as a teenager, you could be out at 2 in the morning, be in a traffic jam. Of course, you'd come home and tell Mom, and she'd say, I don't believe it, but it was absolutely true. Now, man, the last time I was there, which is within the last year, it was like 2 hours to get anywhere. And part of this I blame on all these apps that give you alternate routes because, you know, those of us who were natives, all three of us, we knew the surface streets and we knew how to get around. And now the surface streets are just packed. And I'm pretty sure that it's the maps and the other things on the phones that say exit here. I'm like, no, stay on that. But indeed, if Kelly is in Southern California, we're in deep trouble. I'll be prattling on the rest of the night. So hopefully you'll check out KellySullivanWalden.com, and we'll find out about your dreams. And everybody's got them. Although occasionally you hear from somebody, I don't dream. Well, actually, you don't remember them. And there are things you can do, supposedly, to entice you to do that. Then again, I'm not sure that you want to. You know, my buddy Marianne Ghostbuster, Marianne Winkowski, she's got all sorts of things you can do to make you remember your dreams. And I'm horrified to say it works. Then I realize, I don't want to remember that. Yeah, I don't remember that at all. I'm trying to get a good night's sleep. And next hour, Robert Katzberg, the author of The Vanishing Trial, The Era of Courtroom Performers and the Perils of Its Passing, should be a lot of fun. And although also a lot of horror when you realize what's been going on with regard to the court system and trials. But I do believe that Kelly has made it home. She braved the traffic and got there. So Kelly Sullivan Walden, I was just saying, I hope you don't live in Los Angeles. You'd have never made it home.
Yeah, I do live in Los Angeles.
Oh, then, yeah. Well, see, this is the thing, and I relate completely. I'm a native, and I was saying earlier, you know, before apps, we had all our secret ways. Now, I don't care what street you're on, you can't get from here to there.
Right. Waze doesn't work anymore, and we had a shutdown of all of the power on my street earlier, so I was trying to figure out where to go, and it's been a crazy Mercury retrograde-ish kind of a day, but no Mercury retrograde. It's just, you know, little drama, but I'm here. I'm so excited to be with you.
Oh, well, good. Yes, astrologically, August is kind of in some ways the doldrums, but things really heat up in September. This could get interesting.
Yes, I think it will. I mean, we're living in interesting times, no matter the forecast. Yeah. Every day is there's a lot. We're dreaming a lot, too, right now.
Well, and that's sort of what I want to talk about. And I have a good friend who has a closet in her dreams. It's full of clothes, and she wears them in her dreams. But it's always the same closet and always the same clothes. But she doesn't have them in her waking state. Now, how? Yeah, and they're all. And I mean, this has been going on for years.
Oh, my goodness. I love this dream. Okay, so, well, I have a few questions for her about these clothes, but I'm just going to launch right in, shall I?
Absolutely.
Okay, if it were my dream and I'm dreaming about a closet full of clothes that I'm not wearing, I think clothes represent, they're sort of like a uniform. The clothes often tell us about a persona, a way of being, like, are they conservative? Are they really feminine? Are they sexy? Are they too big? Are they too small? So they represent some aspect of self, maybe that's in the closet. It's not being expressed right now, but it exists within her, and it's maybe to be cultivated. It represents an aspirational aspect of self that she doesn't quite fit yet, or that she used to fit but no longer does. So I've got more questions for her, but it's about a persona.
Okay.
That isn't necessarily the true her, but it's an aspect of her that's hidden, and that, like, is as if to say, hidden resources that she hasn't yet found a way to access.
Interesting. Well, now, I don't have any clothes in my dream, as far as I know. I've never noticed, but I've got cities, I've got interstates, I've got buildings. I have entire areas, and see, the thing is, it'd be one thing if it was in just one dream, but I mean, for like 20 years, I've got this whole interstate thing, and I've got this one building that is in all the dreams, and I know just where it is within the city, but none of this exists.
What's the building like? Is it modern? Is it old-fashioned?
Yeah.
Is it a high-rise?
Yeah, it's a high-rise. It's relatively modern, and it's sort of in a downtown area. I actually used to live in downtown L.A. before it got trendy. When I lived at 9th and Flower, no one would come there. But they didn't have they didn't have buildings like this then, I guarantee it. But they do now. But, yeah, so it would be something modern. But, I mean, I've had this, like I say, like 20, 25, 30 years.
What's your feeling about the building? Do you like it? Does it inspire you? Is it kind of gothic and like, oppressive, or is it exciting?
None of those. It's just there. Now, it's just there. What I will say, and you know, I rarely would normally think to talk to anybody about dreams because it just doesn't come up, but I did talk to my husband and we compared notes, and both of us say the dreams are always confusing, just mildly disturbing. There's never anything good about them. There's never anything terrible. And what I find is some of the classic symbols. I have been stuck in so many elevators that Otis would be out of business. Hallways, long, narrow, dark hallways that go nowhere.
Wow.
Stairwells to hell. Oh, yeah, this is my typical nighttime fare. And so obviously I'm deranged, but other than that, what does this mean?
Well, clearly.
Yeah.
Just kidding. No. Okay, so I'm just going to unpack each of these. So a building. So I often look at dreams from the perspective of yin and yang, masculine, feminine, and like anything that is like man-made, like a building as opposed to an ocean. I think it represents a part of self that is like the strong masculine aspect of self that builds things, that creates things, and that it's got like an edge to it. So it's a part of me that is like man-made, or that lives in this world, that is concerned with the things of this world. And so in all of these things, in fact, the elevator is usually about succeeding or attempt, because we have a thing in our subconscious mind. It's like we tend to favor up over down. So on an elevator, we're trying to, even just the word elevate, it symbolizes like going up somewhere. So it usually is like going up in the world, succeeding. Somebody who has a lot of elevators in the dream, if it were mine, I would say it's success-oriented, trying to move up in the world quickly, or trying to elevate their status, trying to elevate their mood, trying to lift up. But yet stairways, you said going down.
Or up.
To me, or up. Okay, so stairways, they're like an elevator, but just slower. They're step by step. They're moving somewhere between realities, between, like, if each floor is kind of like a chapter in your life or an aspect of yourself, the stairway is the bridge in between. Just like a hallway is also, it represents like a gap in between something. Usually our destination is never the hallway unless we're sneaking out, like, with our lover or something like that, which I'm sure that's not with you.
But there are no lovers. No, nothing like that in these dreams. No.
That'll be another show for another time. But but the hallway is about getting somewhere. It's trying to find. It's like being in the in-between. So it's kind of like a parking lot in a sense, but there's movement usually and trying to find one's way in between from one clear moment to the next. So whatever room you had been in, there's like, it's like being in the gap in between or integrating whatever the next thing is. So, and by the way, down, if you happen to be in the stairway and it's going down or the elevator going down, my particular perspective is that it's not a bad thing. It's not like things are all going to hell. It's just, it's like you're getting grounded. You're going deeper. You can't always go up. Otherwise, you just, you know, it becomes manic. It's like sometimes we need the downs in order to ground how far we've gone.
It seems, and you know, this—if this is true, then this makes sense. Then I'm obviously stuck because it seems like the hallways—they don't go anywhere, and I can't get out of them. And the stairwells, same deal. The elevators, of course, you know, hell, sometimes they go sideways. But you know, bottom line is, I am absolutely stuck. And sometimes it's like, oh, taking this elevator would be easier, but I'm not taking it because I'm usually stuck in it. So I'll just go the long way, and then something worse happens. You know, that type of logic. So
Interesting. Okay, so in a way, the way we do anything is the way we do everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say there's like there's a piece missing at the end where you get to figure out your happy ending. Because a lot of people, we wake up from a dream frustrated, but most people don't realize, at least this is my perspective, that a dream that is unpleasant or even a nightmare is simply unfinished. It's not meant to leave us frustrated. It's meant to move us forward toward some kind of epiphany or some kind of solution. And maybe we just haven't grokked it yet, but we're making progress. So in the waking state, there's a way to cheat, kind of like a dream hack, so to speak. In your waking state, you can imagine, like as if in a meditation, imagine your dream like you are right now, even just in the conversation. But imagine that you're suddenly lucid in that hallway dream or in that not going on the elevator because you're afraid it's going to get stuck, so taking the long way. But you're lucid now, and you're like, hey, I'm dreaming. I can do things different. I don't have to stay stuck. If I was to break this pattern, whatever that stuck pattern was, how might I break it? And then once broken, what might I do? And you can do anything in a lucid dream or even in an imagined lucid dream. You could call in an angel. You could call on an airplane. You could break through a wall. You could snap your fingers and be right where you want to be. So I would ask you to finish this series of dreams by imagining that you fast-forwarded by time-lapse camera all the way to the place where you have your breakthrough and you have your epiphany. So what would happen? That's my question. I don't know if you want to answer that right now.
Well,
that would be fun to know.
I don't know that I can, but when you're talking about lucid dreaming or things that will turn into reality, the only thing I know, and maybe this is because I'm an old person, officially a fossil you're talking to.
No, you're not.
Oh, absolutely.
You're gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen your pictures.
Yeah,
you're hot.
So the only motivation I know is I'll have these dreams about having to go to the bathroom and, you know, mm-hmm. and don't even ask about the bathrooms. These can be nightmares from hell or whatever, or maybe you can't mm-hmm. find one. You know, you're on the interstate and it says next exit 230 miles or whatever. And, you know, next exit the entire state of Utah or whatever. And you're saying to yourself, I gotta go. And then, of course, I will wake up and realize, yes, I had to go.
Right. Okay. So bathroom dreams, this is interesting. In my dream oracle deck, right before they got published, I was taking out the bathroom card because I thought if somebody pulls this card, they're not going to be happy with this because that's not usually a pleasant dream. But on that very day, I had about five people that shared their bathroom dreams with me. And I finally told somebody I was about to take it out. She said, no, it's the most incredible symbol. You got to keep it in. And I did keep it in the deck, and it's actually a source of joy for people because the whole notion of the bathroom, it's symbolic of releasing something so that you can feel lighter, so that you can feel better, so that you don't have to carry around excess weight. If you have to urinate in a dream, and it's sometimes it is related to we actually are trying to wake ourselves up so that
Correct.
We can go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
However, sometimes there's the symbolic aspect too that maybe we're pissed off about something, but we're holding on to it. And we don't have a perfect outlet for it or off ramp, a place to be able to offload that pissosity. So we're maybe used to holding it longer than need be. And maybe it's a message to find a healthy way to offload and turn off that off ramp and find a place to primal scream or strangle somebody that isn't going to, you know, that's going to like it and not retaliate.
It's interesting. The only thing I know about the bathrooms in the dreams are the Department of Health would clearly shut these puppies down. These are not places you ever want to be. But in fact, at that time, I'm relieved that I can wake up and heed the call to nature. But, you know, here I've told you, I've already told my innermost truths here, bathroom dreams, elevator dreams. So what I want is callers. That's what I want, because I can tell you will be able to get to the bottom of their psyche. So 888-876-5593. Nobody will know who you are on the radio. 8888-ROLLYE. I'm Raleigh James. I'm talking to Kelly Sullivan Walden, kellysullivanwalden.com on WGN Radio.
Oh, darling, last night, I had a dream of you. And such a wonderful dream, yes, we do. That I didn't want to wake. Oh, no, no, darling, no. Could only sleep on and on. And have no place to wake and find. No, no more would I want to say goodbye. Could only sleep and dream in the morning. When I'm wide awake, my eyes light up. Pray that they don't wake up my dream. This is what I've always missed. When I take you in my arm and look into your eyes, and you tell me, darling, that you're ready to be kissed. Say the night, the night. Wake my heart a little with sorrow, for I know it'll be the same tomorrow.
I pride myself on playing the original 45. Something tells me I needed to clean that a little better. But that's the Keystoners. Yeah, Philadelphia vocal group Harmony. They were great. Sleep and Dream, 1961 on the Riff label. Yeah, right before lead singer died, they did a great song that Val Shively produced that I'll play One Night Gossip. But yeah, that's the Keystoners. I don't think they're very well known outside of Pennsylvania. But we are talking about your dreams, don't you know? And 888-876-5593. 8888-ROLLYE. And, you know, this is a unique chance because, you know, I can't analyze your dreams. Forget about it. But Kelly can. KellySullivanWalden.com. And, Kelly, we've got our first caller. This is Johnny D. in Youngstown. Hello, Johnny.
Hello, Raleigh. This is unusual. Today is Thursday, isn't it?
It is Thursday.
Right. Oh. Well, I normally talk to you on Fridays.
Well, but, you normally do.
All right. So I was listening. Actually, I've been listening since you started tonight.
So you're the one.
I thought I'd try to figure it out, and I went to your website, and they had the radio station. You had it on your homepage, and so I clicked on it. And then I got to the station you're on, and I'm listening.
Okay.
And so I'm downstairs now in the basement with Caesar.
Good.
Remember I sent you a picture, Caesar?
Yes, Caesar is a delight.
Yeah, he's a bad motor scooter, like I always say. So we're down here, and I'm listening to your guest, a dream. Well, firstly, let me ask you this, because when you first came on this hour or whatever, you mentioned Buddy Rich. Now, he's a drummer, isn't he?
No, Buddy Guy.
Buddy Guy. Oh, I thought you said Buddy Rich.
Buddy
okay,
Guy.
My mistake.
Buddy Guy, 84 years old today, and he has Buddy Guy's Legend, 700 South Wabash in Chicago.
I see. Well, I was confused. I confused him with Buddy Rich. I don't even know if he's still alive. He was a drummer.
Yes, I know he was. Yes.
The reason I, well, when you said that, I confused him. And when I was with one of the groups in my younger days, the drummer was, that was his idol. Well, so
it's been a while. Been a while. Buddy died in 87.
Buddy Rich did.
Yeah, 87. Right. Buddy Guy's still with us. 81 today. Now that we've got that straight, tell me about your dream.
All right. Well, my dream. Now, I originally had this dream when I was probably 11, 12 years old, which is, well, 12 from 68. I don't do the math. But,
all right.
But I've had it reoccurring through the years. What it is, I'm in a, well, we used to play baseball when I was around that age, 11, 12, down a baseball field. It was called Parker Field. And my dad took me down there to Parker Field, when, and this actually happened when I was about, 10, 11, 12 years old. And he had bought me a kite, but the kite wasn't a regular paper kite. It was like a rocket ship balloon type thing, right? It was like a balloon, but it was supposed to be a kite. Well, yeah, it was worked like a kite and everything. And it was a white rocket ship, you know, pretty big. You know, I mean, thing was bigger than me at the time. So anyhow. Wow. He took me down to Parker Field, which was right down the road from where we lived when I was a kid. And we did this kite, and it went up high. I mean, it was a windy day. My dad figured a good day to fly a kite. And I'm one of five kids now, three boys. I have two brothers and two sisters. But anyhow, so he took me down the field there, and this kite went up, and it's like, way up in the air, you know, a couple hundred feet, seemed like, you know. And so he's operating the kite. And so then he hands me the string, roll of string and everything that it's on. And I could barely hold this darn thing, you know. I mean, because I'm only 11, 12 years old, 10, 11 probably. And this kite is really tugging, you know, really tugging. And I can't hold on, right? So then I give it back to my dad, and he's doing it. And then in the dream, the next thing I know, I'm the kite. I'm way up in the air, about 200 feet, right? And I'm scared, but I'm not scared because I know my dad is in control of the kite.
Ooh.
And I've had this dream about since I originally had the dream at 11 years old, I've had it occur in my dreams probably about 10, 15 times in my life.
Okay. Right? So what does it mean?
So that's what's up.
All right.
What's that mean?
Oh, wow. Okay. I love this dream, and I love this connection to this memory. If it were my dream, I always have to preface that because no one on the planet should tell you definitively what your dream means. I just like to, because I'm a frequent flyer, I could just give you a few, some insight based on my experience. So if it were my dream, I'd think this is a really, first of all, it's connecting me to this high, no pun intended, actually pun totally intended, to this high memory of being connected to my dad. And to me, it feels like it's a message, like anytime there's flight in a dream, it means that there's some kind of level of mastery, some level of being able to really explore the boundaries of who you're capable of being. And most of us, we're capable of doing so much more than we actually do, but because we don't feel safe, we feel like the other shoe's going to drop, or well, the rug will get pulled out from beneath us. But it seems like from your perspective, there you had this imprint of an awareness that your dad, it's like your dad's got your back. Your dad's got a hold of you. So I imagine that whatever you've been able to do in your life, there's some tether that brings you back to, I can take a risk. I can do this thing that is maybe a little scary or a stretch for me because my dad's got me. And dad in a dream, even though we all, of course, have a dad, dad can also be a metaphor for our, like, you know, not to get religious on you, but like God, you know, that somebody's got you that's more powerful than you. So you can make a risk, take a risk and stretch your boundaries. So I think this is a dream worth meditating on. It's really powerful. I love it. Thank you for sharing it, Johnny B. How does that land? For you, no pun intended.
I think I'm following what your interpretation is. But one thing I wanted to point out in the dream, like I said, originally I had this dream when I was about 11. In the dream, I'm always 11.
You know? Right.
Yeah. Well, this is often
my dad is a young man.
Well, of course your dad's a young man, because you're having the dream from the perspective of that point in time.
Yeah.
And this feels like sometimes a recurring dream will bring us back to a special time, because if the agenda of our dreams, basically the agenda of our subconscious mind, ultimately, though sometimes in a circuitous fashion, its goal is to bring us to a place of our own empowerment. Our dreams are trying to awaken us out of our fear, out of our drama, to a place where we feel really good about ourselves. And this dream really does that, because it connects you to a significant memory. As one of five kids, I imagine you didn't get a lot of one-on-one time with dad. So this was special.
Well, and It was. I remember that day. I can remember that event.
Yeah, right.
And my dad was a working man, and he worked a lot, and any time spent with him, you know, in a good way, was memorable.
Sure.
You know,
Johnny, thank you for calling, Johnny. I appreciate it a lot.
Johnny, I love this dream. Thank
you
so
later.
Much.
Bye. Yeah, that was a great dream.
Can I throw out one little comment on his dream? I know he's off the line.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to say that recurring dreams are fascinating to me, because they show us what we're focused on and where we're at. And a lot of people, most people that come to me have recurring nightmares.
Yeah.
And it's exciting for me when somebody has a recurring, like, fabulous dream like this that is uplifting, because it's every time Johnny B has that dream, it's like he's reinforcing that neural pathway in his brain that is telling him that it's okay to fly, that his dad's got him, and maybe he didn't get to spend a lot of time with him as much as he would have liked to. The time that he spent was special, and he can continue to spend those times with him. And I think that, you know, many people listening might have FOMO, dream FOMO, but you can actually transfer that dream energy onto you, so you don't have to be jealous of Johnny B's awesome dream.
Yeah. Now, John, who screened your call, said he has a recurring dream where he meets his father, but his father is dead, and he asks his father, how can I be talking to you? And he says, it was a mistake.
It was a mistake?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, so, gosh, another John. All right, so from one perspective, I think that our departed loved ones, they do come to call in our dreams. And depending on when they've left, and I wonder if John can tell us if this dream, how long his father has passed, and how soon into his father's passing did this dream come? Is he available to
He's screening a call right now, but I know that he had told me that his father died when he was like a sophomore in college, so, you know, 50 years ago or so, and I don't know when he started having the dream.
Okay. Well, I'm going to take a few assumptions and make a few leaps.
Okay.
So from one perspective, I think it takes a lot of love for a departed loved one to bust into our dream. I think that it's not just our memories. I think it is a combination. Sometimes it's simply our memories, or it's a wish fulfillment because we miss these people that are passed on the other side. But I think when they show up and it seems so real, it's almost, it's as if they really do make an appearance, and they bust in from the other side to say, hello, I'm still with you. And John says to him, but Dad, you're dead. And he says it's a mistake. And from my perspective, because words can get wonky in a dream, I don't know that it means exactly that. I might interpret it as my death wasn't planned. Like, I wish that I didn't die then. I wish that I had more time with you. It was a mistake, meaning that my greater intent would have been to spend more time with you. I'm sorry that I had to leave you so young. It was a mistake based on my limited perspective. So, meaning, like, don't discard me because I'm dead. Like, I'm still here with you. And maybe you have a mistaken perspective that I'm actually dead, because you never completely die, just the body dies. But the spirit, which is the real being, I believe, that part doesn't die. So it's a mistake to think that they're dead.
Yeah, that's what I had thought. That's exactly when he told me about it. I said, well, the mistake is probably yours that you're thinking he's dead, because no one's dead.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
All right.
Yes.
We'll get to Jim from Chicago. Yes. There's room for you, too, at 888-876-5593. That's 888-ROLLYE. This is a rare opportunity to find out about your dreams. Hey, take Kelly up on this. KellySullivanWalden.com on WGN Radio. Little Eddie Hodges, Bandit of My Dreams, 1965 on Cadence, got to number 65 on the pop charts. He was a child actor. He was on a lot of those westerns, Bonanza and stuff, and did a lot of guest shots, Dick Van Dyke and all that. And his first hit was I'm Gonna Knock on Your Door, much bigger record for him, but a lot of people don't realize that Eddie Hodges's I'm Gonna Knock on Your Door was actually a cover of the Isley Brothers version from 1959. Some night we'll play that. We are talking about dreams with a woman who knows all and tells most, Kelly Sullivan Walden, and it's KellySullivanWalden.com, a dream expert, certified hypnotherapist, author, speaker, and much more. You can check out that website and get all sorts of good info and stuff. But right now, you've got a once-in-a-lifetime, okay, maybe not that infrequent, but a rare opportunity to have your dream analyzed. You just have to be willing to tell it on 50,000 watts, which you can only use your first name, so it's good. 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh, and that takes us to Jim from Chicago. Hello, Jim.
How you doing, Raleigh? Hi, Kelly. Kelly, you answered.
Hi, Jim.
I had a two-part question. You answered the first one in your prior explanation of reoccurring dreams. Most of my dreams, I had two jobs in my life, one right out of high school, and then one was my career. And I dream most of the time, I'm back into both job sites. Most of the dreams are nice, you know, prior. And then I worked in a grocery warehouse prior to me. I'm a retired policeman, and I have dreams.
Wow.
I'm back on the street, but they're all good dreams. But to explain, that was a good time in my life. Now, my second question is, why do I dream? What causes me to dream?
How
do dreams affect me? I mean, you know, what makes me dream at night?
Good questions.
Yes. Oh, my God. I want to answer them all. Wow. Jim, thank you so much. And by the way, my father is a retired police chief in Los Angeles. So I thank you for your service, and I appreciate you. All right. So first of all, you kind of got the recurring aspect. When there's a recurring dream, it tends to denote importance. It means pay attention. It's kind of like the FedEx guy or gal leaving a note on your door telling you to pick up a package, and they keep leaving the note until you come by and pick it up. So it means that you haven't completely picked it up yet. However, there's also this other perspective on recurring dreams, that we all have recurring characters, recurring situations, recurring people, places, and things that are part of the backdrop of who we are in dreams. So if you are passionate about your job, or if you were passionate about your job, it's likely that you're going to dream about it, because we dream about the aspects of ourselves that left a big, deep imprint. So to me, it tells me that you really cared about what you did. It tells me that there was a sense of self, a sense of yourself, especially, I know, when you're a cop. I mean, you put your life on the line every day, and you never know if you're going to live or die that day. And it's, you know, I think you guys are most of the time unsung heroes, 99.9% of the time, and it's intense. So I would imagine there was both, like you said, they're happy memories. My dad has a lot of happy memories of being out there, because people don't become cops, from my perspective, unless you have a hero archetype. And there's, it's like the best thing is to get to spread those wings and fly as a hero. As a cop, you get to be in that heroic place. You get to put it to the test every day. So I imagine those were kind of like glory days, and dreaming about that is kind of like recapturing some of the essence, some of the fragrance, some of the meat of that time, and being able to bring some of that into your life now. Not that you want to go around being the cop everywhere, or being the grocery warehouse guy everywhere, but there's that sense of importance and purpose, and it's even like testosterone and dopamine that is meant to like keep you awake and alive and on your toes in your life today. That's what I believe your dream's about.
All right, Jim, thank you for calling.
Riley, how about Dreams of Contentment by the Doves?
Okay, you got it. Okay, bye. Why not? I take bumper requests from people like Jim anyway. Paul is in Chicago. Welcome to WGN Radio.
Thank you. Yeah. I have dreams, that recurring dreams that seem to be variations, but pretty much the same thing over time.
Great.
They usually happen when I'm in some sort of level of stress. And the dream is that this is like the senior year in college, and I never really got into the college that I thought I was going to get into. I was there all the time trying to do that, and then graduation is now occurring, or getting ready to start, and my family is coming to the graduation, and I haven't even, haven't been there to, not an unusual dream,
no,
probably, but
really common. Really common.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. Most people go back to school in their dreams when they're in the midst of struggling through a life lesson. And like you said, it's usually stress that will prompt this dream. And stress is indicative that you're putting an aspect of yourself to the test. Like, I can't remember who wrote the book, The Road Less Traveled. I think it was Scott Peck that said, if we were wise, every time we're stressed, we would be happy, because we would know that we're about to learn a new lesson. We're about to become wiser. So I imagine these moments of stress, although not pleasant, they're times in your life where you're learning something, you're growing, and having to go back to school in this dream in this way that has you feel incomplete. And even like many people who are very successful have the quote-unquote imposter syndrome, that they don't have enough, that they didn't finish, that they don't have enough degrees, they haven't read enough books, they don't have something. And usually those people are really the people that know quite a lot. Usually the slackers don't have dreams like this. So I imagine, Paul, that you're probably a very big, like very conscientious, and you probably know a heaven of a lot more than you even give yourself credit for. And you're not an imposter. You've earned whatever place that you have, that you've got in this life, and then some.
All right, Paul, good deal. Thanks
for
calling.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
You're welcome,
good
Paul.
Good deal. Thanks for calling. Yeah, wow, I can't believe the hour is just about up, and I didn't even get to ask you about other dimensions and where we really go in dreams, and do we have other lives, and are we living parallel lives? So we have to have you back to talk about that.
I would love it, Raleigh. Thank you so much for having me on. And, yes to all of those questions, but we can go into more detail.
Oh, yes. Looking forward to it.
Want.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Sweet dreams.
You too.